About a year ago, as of the 1st of January of 2004, we cut the budget from $8,000 a month to $4,000 a month. Now we're going to cut it from $4,000 a month to about $2,000 a month. I'm not sure of the exact figure now, but it will be about $2,000 a month if we don't have to pay for that satellite fee. Now, is this discussion enough to get a response from you if you have an interest in the satellite? My prediction is that there will be no response, and that's fine. We'll take action. But now you've been notified. Don't tell me that you haven't been notified. We need to hear the other. rp@truthradio.com is the email address, or write to us at P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444. The phone number is area 805-929-8448. Looking forward to hearing from you with your word of support. Thank you. If you listen to Truth Radio on satellite, you know our days are numbered. As of March 1st, you will no longer find Truth Radio on the satellite, but we'll still be here, www.truthradio.com. And by the way, those of you that do listen through the Internet, it's time to refresh your favorites button or your bookmark. Make sure to go to our main webpage, www.truthradio.com. You'll notice four buttons across the page, the listen buttons, right there on the home page. Make sure your favorite is set to either the one on the far left or the one right next to it. Either the one over on the far left is called the direct feed, or the one that's labeled Windows. It's important that you set up your favorites that way so that you'll still be with us as of March 1st. By the way, that direct feed is an MP3 stream. Stay with us here at www.truthradio.com.
We're going to rise with the sun in the morning. We're going to start each brand new day with a prayer. Because without the love and kindness of our Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're gonna do the work our Lord puts before us. And there's a job that truly needs to get done. The job of waking up the nation to the new world order, which is trying to put us under its
thumb. Hi, welcome to this week's edition of the Deanne Burley Show, and I'm your host, Deanne Burley. Just for a little note to listeners, say no to the Social Security bill that's before the president. It's going to cause a horrible effect on our nation. And I think you need to look into it and see what is actually going on before the president allows this to happen. And we do have the right to speak up and say that we don't want it. I have tonight a program dealing with our military, our troops. I have a man that's going to be on. He's a highly decorated military man. He's a former sergeant. He was in both the Gulf and current war. And he has a lot to talk about. The one thing about Sergeant Dennis Kine is the fact that he has the courage and bravery to come back into the United States and tell Americans what is happening to their young people, their kids that are being sent overseas. This situation with deployed uranium radiation and the issue of dealing with our military men that are basically coming back unprogrammed, I mean undeprogrammed, that is a very serious matter. I had talked to Dennis prior to the show. We were discussing the issue of what's going on with the young men coming back, and it's really deplorable. So I would like, for further ado, to introduce my guest tonight. And I would like to give the listening audience a chance to call in to ask questions. The number is 866-771-8402. 866-771-8402. The calls will begin, we will take calls at the beginning of the next commercial break. Dennis, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing real good. Thanks for having me on the show tonight, Deanne. It's wonderful to be with you.
Well, thank you for coming on. Dennis, I want you to explain to the listeners about you. You were in the first Gulf War, is that correct?
Yes, I served with the 24th Infantry Division. Norm Schwarzkopf writes about it in his book that we were the most forward unit in Operation Desert Storm. I was an airborne medic with them. I served with the 34th Medical Battalion, came back from Operation Desert Storm and went to the U.S. Army Drill Sergeant School at Camp Parks in Dublin, California, and spent a few years as a drill sergeant on Fort Sill, Oklahoma and Fort Bliss, Texas, and spent actually 15 years in the Army collectively in all four components of the Army, from the National Guard, Reserves, Ready Reserves, Active Duty component, and come from a long line of military people. My grandfather retired as a colonel. My uncle is a full colonel in the Army. We have, you know, ancestors that, you know, fought in the Civil War and the Revolutionary War and all that, too. So I have one of those families that really likes to talk about being in the military.
And also, you came back with some medals. That's correct, isn't it?
I came back with quite a few. You know, I'm not going to try to say I'm Audie Murphy or anything, but my ribs...
Very close.
yeah, I have a pretty exceptional awards and ribbons that I wear around. I got some badges, a drill sergeant badge, an airborne badge, an expert field medical badge, an Army Commendation Medal, the Kuwaiti Liberation Medal, the Southwest Asia Service Medal with 3 stars on it. So, yeah, I got pretty decorated during Operation Desert Storm.
Now, what was it that you saw that caused you to become an activist and speak out and travel around the country? What was it that really got to you?
Well, I sent my first letter to the United Nations in 1993. I was a non-commissioned officer in the Army. I wasn't necessarily a conscientious objector by any means. But I did believe at the time very strongly in the fact that the United Nations was using the United States military as sort of a police agency, and that's what had gotten us in trouble was by them, you know, electing to use the United States military as the arm of enforcement. We now had been, you know, given our basically, you know, the Bush clan, all types of leeway into doing the things they were going to do now by going around and pretending they were just going to be the police whenever they wanted to be the police.
Now the thing is that over there, during the Gulf War, I want to just ask you, you saw a lot of Gulf War syndrome develop, correct?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we shipped in August of 1990 after being vaccinated with just an incredibly abusive vaccination program, and we were deployed way too soon. We should have had way more time to assimilate to the vaccination. So we got into the country. We were totally exposed to sand ingestion and malaria and things like that, and got some more vaccinations. And then we were eating pyristic bromide tablets as well, which were intended to block off our synapses should we ingest a biological or a chemical agent. And those just cause incredible brain damage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Because some of the kids, you know, they're from the Appalachians, you know, sorry to say, they don't even know we landed on the moon yet. And they get some of those pills going down their throat, and to them, more the better. So the damage it was doing was just exacerbated by the fact that they were eating way above the dosage levels. That also compiled with the fact that they just laid pesticides all over, you know, the place. And even the Gulf War Review newsletter that comes out talks about 6 different types of pesticides and herbicides they were using over there.
For what?
Well, you know, out in the middle of the desert, you have to recognize that there's not too many things that are living that aren't poisonous. So a couple of the kids, you know, would enter into the latrine or maybe into the outdoor shower facility, and they might get bit by a poisonous vector, you know, a rodent or something. And if they were bit by one of those, they would be sent back to the rear. So instead of having that happen, they just went ahead and just laid pesticides everywhere to kill all the poisonous vectors. And that just caused an incredible amount of neurosis for the people who walked into those, you know, pesticide-laden
traps. Especially in that type of heat at times. What was the average temperature there?
Oh, well, I think, you know, by this time, you know, we got there in August. 130.
There were
days where, and it's 130 with no shade, you know, it's 130 degrees, no shade. You are sitting, you know, right underneath the sun, you know, it's not very pleasant.
Well, the issue now is some time ago on Oprah's show, in fact, about a few years back, she had done a program about the military coming back with syndromes, where there was a number of soldiers coming back and killing their wives. Yeah. Now, is this true, or is it a syndrome, or is it just a thing that just chancely happened then and it's not going on now?
Oh, it's been happening now. There's a number of soldiers, 101st Airborne up in Kentucky. I even have some footage I recorded from TV one night that the guys were coming back, 101st Airborne. I think there was three of them that killed their wives and then killed themselves. And then the particular one that I recorded was a guy who didn't kill himself. He had just killed his wife. What happens is after you've been on a battlefield is you come home and you teeter-totter on homicidal, suicidal. That's where you sit. You've been engaging in, you know, in killing people for extended periods of time. I mean, any longer than like a minute of killing people is too long, you know. So an hour of it's way too long, and a day of it's getting longer. And then after you've been killing people for, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year or so, you know, you come home and you're teetering on that idea that that's what you've been doing, and that's been your mechanism for enforcing, you know, your emotions for that day. So you wake up and you think, well, your wife really isn't in your space today, and that's just what happens. You're already homicidal, so you kill. It's like a dog who's drawn blood before. And then what happens is you go experience the very first emotions you had when you killed somebody, which they did studies way back in World War II. The MacArthur did some studies, and they found that the soldier actually has more fear of killing another human being than he does of dying himself. So with that being said, you know that soldier, once he's been killed, has killed another human being, the trauma that's, you know, incurred in that human being's psyche is something that they relive, and now they've killed their wife. It makes them suicidal almost instantly, so, you know, that's how they handle it, because they just go in that direction. So you have an incredible amount of this happening. It happened after Desert Storm. It's been happening after the Afghanistan stuff. And really what was happening in these previous conflicts, you know, they used a lot of active duty soldiers to fight in these battles. Well, this time around, you know, we haven't seen the mass loads of the National Guardsmen or the reservists come home yet. And when these National Guardsmen and these reservists come home and they get out on our streets and they're in our neighborhoods and we start seeing them butchering their families, I think America's going to, you know, get another dose of what war is really about.
Well, the thing is there a way of deprogramming? Now, there was an issue, and we kind of discussed it before, about the man who was in the state of Washington and also in Virginia that was snipering at people. He also killed his wife and his wife's girlfriend prior to these murders. Was he one of these people, would you say, or...?
Are we talking about John Allen Muhammad, the sniper in Washington, D.C., in the Baltimore area?
Yes.
Well, John Allen Muhammad, he served in Operation Desert Storm, and one of the things that a lot of the guys that I read about in some of the articles were saying about him, some of the guys that he served with, you know, he said he was a stand-up guy, but, you know, that he had post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, I'm not so sure that that's the diagnosis. I think what he was, you know, he was well aware of the fear and the torture and the pain and everything that is being inflicted on the people of Iraq right now, because we did it to them, you know, we started doing it to them 15 years ago. And, you know, he just kind of went in bonkers. And that was his expression of it. It's the same thing that we will see with, you know, returning veterans now. We saw right here in my area out in Vallejo, I think it was, a young Latino soldier who had returned from the battlefield, and they were trying to send him back over there. Well, the cops claimed that he wanted, you know, suicide by cops, so he stood in front of the 7-Eleven and waved a gun around, and the police shot him up. But his real crisis was that he didn't want to go back to the battlefield.
Mm.
So they're running out of ways of expressing themselves, and the only way they know how to express themselves based on their training is violently, so they do.
We're going to go to a break in a little while, but I want to also mention the fact that we also have other issues. The soldiers that are being killed, the number, it's much greater than what we're told here, is it not?
It's always been like that. It's been like that in every war that's ever been fought. If the American people knew the casualties that America was sustaining on this battlefield right now, they wouldn't put up with it. You know, the statistics are pretty clean right now that, you know, most of the American citizens don't support this war. I know it's at least 60%. And so if they really knew what was really happening, if they knew the raping and the pillaging and even the number of casualties that we were taking, as you know, we were the liberators, so to speak, and there was any justification in it, they wouldn't put up with it. It's grossly underrepresented in the media.
Well, the other issue, too, is going back to the rape. We have a court martial going on right now with a young woman and a young man in the military accused of horrendous acts against the prisoners that they were watching over. Is this also post-traumatic stress, or is this something that has to do with them being commanded to do these things?
Yeah, that's the Lindy England, her behavior with this other guy, right? There's a lot of external influence going on. I can tell you that's not the military I was trained in. It's not the military that, you know, I ever taught a private how to behave like when I was a drill sergeant.
We're coming up on a commercial, and we'll be right back with Sergeant Dennis Klein. And if you want to call in, 866-771-8402.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or client. Find out if you can take advantage. Or, if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot, and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that can cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. Call and advise your firm. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Are you new here in heaven?
Yeah, I just arrived.
So what did you do to get into heaven?
Well, I don't know. I found a wallet once with $1,000 in it and returned it all to the owner.
Everything good would be like if we got to heaven by being good.
Is that all?
What did you do to get in?
I put my boys through college by unselfishly working every weekend for 10 years, making bean dips to sell at a flea market.
Wow.
Nothing. I invented the cure for placebositis, which saved the lives of thousands of people who didn't even know they were sick. Wait a minute. I single-handedly took on 12 gang members to protect a little old lady.
Wow.
When did you do that? About a minute ago.
Survival makes it
500 people
like this.
God, to those who trust him, it's not something we earn or deserve. Heaven won't be filled with proud or boastful people.
You know, I never thought heaven would be so hot.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
We're going to rise with the sun. Let us start a brand new day with a friend. Goes without the love and kindness of the Lord and our Savior. We sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're going to do the work our Lord puts before us. There's a job that surely needs to get done. The job of waking up the nation to the new world order, which is trying to put us under their thumb.
Hi, welcome back, and this is Deanne Broly with the Deanne Broly Show with Dennis Klein, Sergeant, extraordinary man, an officer that came forth to tell the truth of what's going on in the Middle East and what this warfare is ending up into. Dennis, before we went to commercial break, we were talking about the issue of the psychological effect of the troops, and we were talking about Miss English's court-martial.
Right.
Now, the problem with that is, I don't know if this is true, but do you feel that she may have been ordered to do these things, and this is why she did not, you know, come forth and tell anyone of what she was seeing and what she was participating in?
Oh, yeah, I don't necessarily know that, you know, the particular soldier got ordered that, you know, hey, go and behave like this, but I think there's an... what we call in, you know, legalese terms would be implied consent, you know. There were some people that were her superiors that were implying that it was totally okay for her to behave in a fashion that was, you know, dehumanizing and derogatory. And that particular, that vertical command structure that exists in the military is meant to do that, you know. It's meant to imply a lot of things, and one of the things it implied was it was okay for her to exercise and abuse her authority at that time, and she did it. And, you know, sadly enough, that's not a defense, and the people who implied that it was okay for her to do it will never even be, you know, brought up by name.
Well, do you also feel, too, I heard that there's another case of rape coming in, a number of rape cases that are coming in that... are happening in the Middle East, and how is this going to be handled? I mean, this is just one situation after another. How can the United States deal with this if the soldiers come back in this?
Well, situation? You know, I mean, I don't, you know, to the exclusion again of the soldiers and the fact that they're raping. You know, this guy Charles Grainer, who was Lindy's, you know, partner in crime. From what I understand, he worked in a civilian jail system here in the States.
Hmm.
And if we take a look at, you know, our prison system here in America, it's the most corrupt, ruthless, racist, discriminating thing in the whole world. And, you know, people are being raped to death, you know, violently raped to death in the prison system here in America. And so I would hardly expect, you know, for a lack of a better way to put it, any better treatment of anybody. You know, we're not going to be able to export this prison system we got here. Everybody in the whole world knows how nasty it is. And so when we start exporting, you know, our version of democracy, that's what we have to remember. That's exactly what we're exporting, is our very own prison system.
Well,
the first thing we're going to do is lock people up in any country we walk into.
Well, there's a caller. Caller, are you there?
Speaking to me?
Yes,
I'm here.
Do you have a question?
Well, I had a couple, actually, with Dennis. The fact that everybody doesn't think about what they're doing, are they giving them steroids? You know,
no.
Are they giving the soldiers steroids? I mean, I can't attest to that at all. You know, I know that, you know, the soldier's intake, his food intake, is totally controlled and managed on any given day, so it's possible. I get it.
And basically, do you have, well, you've dealt with this, was there a tremendous change in any of the soldiers where they become more and more angry and violent?
Yeah, we caught a lot of that. We, you know, that when you start seeing even guys like me, I can speak to it, you know, from heart, that, you know, I came from an area where I never knew anybody of a different nationality per se, and I became very racist. I became very angry, very mad, ragheads this, ragheads that. I was talking totally out of my character. And we'd look over, there'd be an E-7 sergeant first class who was ticking his nose and eating his boogers all of a sudden, and just totally, incredibly erratic behavior coming out of all of us.
Well, that points very clearly to me that something had to be manipulated in your, you know, in your food and whatever you were drinking or whatever.
Right.
You can't just all of a sudden change just like that.
Right.
And it's did it seem to be a gradual thing, or did it just show up overnight just because of the way it was?
Well, you know, it's unique. I think it's all compounded by the different elements we were given. You know, our diet's very controlled from the get-up, and we're eating processed food, these meals ready to eat. They're meant to constipate soldiers so that we don't have to take a number two in the middle of the battle.
And that disrupts your body.
And, you know, what we're doing, they're basically fooling our body. So after a number of months of that, your nutrients are totally depleted. You're probably getting some sort of neurosis from that, too.
Well, the vaccinations, I mean... are incredibly horrible. I mean, think about it. We get a vaccination when we're born, and it's mixed with animal DNA.
Mm.
It sounds more like a mutation of the species to me. There is a book called The Medical Mafia.
Okay.
It's written by Guy Lane Lanstott.
Okay.
And she explains how the vaccinations screw you up as a child and what they create. They can create bipolar disease, they can create anorexia, bulimia, any kind of nervous disorder will come. And that's just not a vaccination that you give your kids when they're born.
Yes.
And there is another gentleman that you might find interesting. His name is William Cooper. He wrote a book called Behold a Pale Horse, if you haven't
heard. Wasn't he the guy down in Arizona?
He's the one that tried to tell everybody about what was happening about the Illuminati.
Right, didn't the IRS get him down in Arizona?
Yeah, and he was killed.
Right.
Right, he was killed by an Apache County sheriff deputy, and they gave the reason was that they got attacked by something else, but in reality, he said once he got done telling everybody the truth, because
right.
he felt it was getting too close, he told everybody on that interview at his press conference that he'll be dead soon. A week
right.
or two later, he was killed. Another gentleman that would really be good for everybody to go check out is davidicke.com.
Right.
And you go to headlines, and it tells you all about the things that are going on. That's how I learned about you a while ago, through David's headlines, because they, for some reason, I guess they can't keep that away from us, so I'm able to go to headlines at this point, and he just tells you all about the horrible things that are going on, and he tells you about all the things that our newspapers and our media does not bother or doesn't feel like covering because they're run by something that isn't exactly ethical.
Well, I thank you, caller. Hold on a minute. I want to ask Dennis some more questions. Dennis, let's talk about the issue that brought you to me in the beginning. I've interviewed you before, and we discussed the issue of deployed uranium, the use of nuclear weapons, and the amount of radiation that is in the Middle East. You want to tell the listeners about what it was that you found that began your quest to stop DUs?
Depleted uranium is a byproduct of our nuclear reactors. And what depleted uranium is, by its very definition, is uranium-238. So if you just go take a look at that chemical chart we got in our chemistry classes, you see U-238 up there. It's the last stable element on the chart. It's radioactive. It's what they make nuclear weapons with. And so what they did when they, needed to power up the reactors, they ended up with a lot of this uranium-238 left over, and they started using it in our weapons programs. And Bob Dole, who's, a very conservative, politician, was on the Senate floor in the 70s going, man, what are you doing using this stuff, in weapons? And then by 1989, they had started using this uranium-238 in commercial aircraft as a counterbalance and a counterweight, because as uranium-238 is very heavy. It's heavier than lead, which comes in at 216. So because of its weight, you can get more weight in a smaller area. So they started using it to counterweight aircraft right here in our civilian area. And we know, from statistics that stewardesses and pilots have huge rates of cancer, breast cancer and prostate cancer both. So, we're using radioactive metal in our aircraft now. And in addition to that, they pelted, southern Iraq and Kuwait with 350 tons of depleted uranium during Operation Desert Storm, and that's what my guys walked into. And there was a guy in my dust-off unit at the 498, the air ambulance unit, who, his skin melted down to his bones.
Oh, my God.
And this is no joke. This stuff they're using, it's radioactive. It has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. That makes it, longer than the human experience when you do it out to 45 billion years, making it longer than the human experience. It should have never been liberated. It should have never been mined from, the four corners in America in the first place, or the pygmy environments of Africa, or even the indigenous cultures of Canada, where they've been mining this uranium and leaving the tailings there for so long that, the rates of cancer are horrific. We know that a lot of people, die and their cultures die and things like that, but they're leaving elements in these indigenous cultures in the cradle of civilization and like that are altering the gene pool and aberrating the chromosomes at such a rapid rate that there's a potential that, their young people may never live to an age where they're going to procreate themselves.
And even if they do, right now, from what I have correlated and found out, there's a lot of bursts of deformities, both in our military and also with the people within Afghanistan. The fact is floating all over the world. What is your opinion of that? Sorry.
It's that. It makes me cough, man. It's horrific. Chemtrails for everyone. Chemtrails for everyone. You know, I have one thing I'd like to say, Dennis, and that is, to me it sounds more like they're just committing genocide and they're taking out the countries one by one so they can take them over and just run them from the get-go the way you would, the way America is here. They're going to bring McDonald's and all the rest of it there.
Oh, yeah.
And the bottom line is that everything that happened, in the William Cooper book I told you about, Behold a Pale Horse, there's a declaration by the Illuminati that a war against the American people. Isn't it funny that it also was the beginning of fast food the same year? There's many different things in 54 that started to happen to us that we had no idea.
Wow.
But, Dennis, I want to ask you, too, now, this situation with deployed uranium, you've been going all over in talking to people in various states about this issue. What is the reading you're getting when you go in and have these conferences? Are you getting a lot of people? Because the media is not showing this.
Yeah, Storm Phillips and Gene Pauly did a cover of it on the Dateline, NBC, back in 1994. That's the last mainstream media that covered it, and Storm Phillips has been out of business for a while. So it's going to be tough to get the mainstream media to pick it back up again, but we're getting a couple presses out in Washington, the state of Washington, Seattle King 5 has done a nice story on it. So everywhere I go, you know, it's starting to catch a buzz. People are starting to recognize the pictures that I'm using on one of the latest videos I produced are of children born in Iraq, and you know, we're trying to get really graphic with it for them so they can see, you know, qualitatively what the results are. And some places get more reception than others, but I'm on my way to New York, up to Albany, and they've had some depleted uranium exposure there to the civilian community.
Really?
Yeah, because they had a lead company there that was manufacturing some depleted uranium itself, and some particles got liberated, right, kicked out over in the air like that.
Is that that company that's being investigated in possibly a lawsuit, Grace Corporation?
I'm not quite sure what it's NL Labs.
Okay, that's a different one.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that there's a problem with this uranium and this nuclear stuff. It's floating all over the planet. It's not like it stays in one spot, and it's affecting everything. Now, for the listening audience, I just want to give a little glimpse of what's going on. The people that are serving in the military, you said they're aberrationists. They're also blacks and Latinos and people from just the regular walk of life that were kids that were in high school, I would gather, that were getting into ROTC so they could get a college education. Is that not true?
Right, yeah, it's pretty much the lineup.
And the kids that are over there, that they sent over in these areas, how much are they being paid for this kind of abuse?
Nice word. Very well put. I got a $5,000 signing bonus to go, you know, to drill sergeant school when I came home from the war.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah, but the reality of it is that's not a bad chunk of money for some people from some parts of the country, even still today, and that was 1994.
That's sad.
You know, that's really sad.
It is.
$5,000 isn't, well, when you realize that they control 80 to 85% of all the wealth, and all we're left with is the 15% that we all have to live on, and all the garbage they put us through to get that money from us, you begin to feel like a cattle or sheep.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly, if you're conscious.
So what is the hourly rate that they're getting? Is it hourly, monthly, or commissions, or what is it that they get?
An hourly scale that increases for every year you're in service, you know, and plus what pay grade you're in by, you know, sergeant first class. And then when you go to the combat zone, they think
I think they might be throwing in an extra $180 or something like that for combat pay, hazardous duty pay. And that's what George Bush was trying to take away from the fellas and soldiers.
Take away?
Yeah, he was trying to take away their hazardous duty pay, saying it wasn't a combat zone anymore. So
right.
He was trying to get that out of them. And then you can get a few extra dollars depending on whether you're flying around in a helicopter on more days than not. And some other, little bonuses. But for the most part, you just get paid, one lump sum. And, for a sergeant with, 15 years in the service, when I, split in 2003, and I was probably, making about $1,400 a month.
Huh.
And that's what they get paid. And that's
it's
not,
peanuts for your life.
It is.
Peanuts for not having the proper armor.
Right.
All that. And then the thing is, now we're getting ready to go back to another commercial break, but I wanted to say, too, to the listeners, you have to look at this aspect, too. $1,400 a month. That's the that's a bookkeeper's salary, or somebody, an accounting clerk in, let's say, in the area of Chicago or New York, that's the average. Now, they're not carrying a gun, they're not carrying a weapon, they don't have to do any of the things that these soldiers have to do. Plus, they're rebuilding Iraq right now and doing other things that they weren't told that they needed to do. And they have been under psychological abuse. And then the president is now talking about eliminating Social Security, saying that there's not enough money to pay into it. The soldiers, I don't know if they even get Social Security. We're going to talk about that when we come back. And anyone calling in, 866-771-8402. This could be your child. How do you feel about this?
I have a real problem. I just learned about a new product. I don't know about it. I can't to talk to you about it. Do I start by asking you if you have a slow running or a clogged drain in your house? That would have worked, but I wonder if I'd get your attention. I don't know where to go with this, but an advertiser here at Truth Radio has a product that will free up your slow moving drain, unclog that messy drain in your bathroom, or bring health, well, almost health, to your septic tank. It's called Drain Free. Why am I so concerned about how to tell you this story? Because I have seen what the most popular lye-based product will do to the pipe under my sink. Two of those products eat away the gunk. They eat away the pipe, too. It's great to learn about a new, healthy, helpful product. The Drain Free is that product. To start toward solutions in your life, call 1-800-863-0283. That's 800-863-0283.
Gay marriage. Now, what's the answer? Answers with Ken Ham, author of the best-selling book, The Lie Evolution. Well, Ken, how can Christians in our increasingly secular Western cultures deal publicly with this issue of gay marriage?
Well, at a recent conference on the gay marriage issue, a prominent Christian leader told the audience that you shouldn't use the Bible in debating gay marriage. He said that the culture no longer listens to such biblical arguments. But the Bible is the Word of God. It's the only absolute authority we have in all matters of life and conduct. With Adam and Eve's creation and their marriage a literal history, only then do we have a basis for saying that marriage must be a man and a woman. Think about it. Ultimately, without the Bible, marriage could be anything you wanted it to be. The reason much of the culture won't listen to the arguments from the Bible is because they think that evolutionary ideas and the concept of millions of years of history have disproved the Bible's accuracy and historicity. Instead of saying that we can't use the Bible to argue against gay marriage, Christian leaders should be opposing anti-biblical evolutionary ideas, and then they need to explain to the world why the Bible's history in Genesis is true, thus establishing it can be trusted, including what it teaches about the origin of marriage. Then they can show why gay marriage is wrong. Ken Ham shares much more about this controversial topic in his new booklet on gay marriage. It's available free on our website, AnswersRadio.com. AnswersRadio.com.
We're going to rise with the sun and the morning. We're going to start each brand new day with a prayer. Because without love and kindness, Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're going to do the work our Lord puts before us. There's a job that surely needs to get done. The job of waking up the nations in the new world order, which is
tried to put us under.
Hi, we're back, and this is the DM Broly Show, and I have Sergeant Dennis Kina. And we're talking about the issue of war casualty and how the soldiers are treated and what's going on. We ended up our last conversation about how much they're being compensated. It's very little for the amount that they're expected to do. And then plus them losing not only their basic rights, but also emotionally being challenged because of the amount of effects that they are hit with. The temperatures being 130 degrees, them not having the proper weaponry, armor to put on. You have all kinds of types of abuse. And then the military is getting ready to possibly be returned home. So what is the solution? What can we do to help our young men out, each one of us?
Well, I think that
Dennis, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, I think that we have to bring the troops home now. I mean, the statistics are in. Even almost a year ago, Congress recognized that if they had had the information that they had then, before the war started, they wouldn't have gone to war. And now we know that 60% of the country is against what's happening. And I just can't seem to understand that when we're actually going to be able to get our government, who's supposed to be sitting of the people, for the people, by the people, representing the people, to behave the way the Congress, which it represents the majority at 435 members, represents the majority, has already spoken. The people statistically, significantly indicate at 60% or better that they don't want this going on. When does the Senate and the executives and the judicial branch start responding to the citizenry?
Well, have you talked to the Congress in there? Have you talked to those people in the Senate?
Have I?
Yes.
Oh, they're not ready for what I'm talking about. They're not even dealing with what they're talking about themselves. It's just the fact that they know we shouldn't be over there fighting in a war, and they can't seem to get people home.
Well, Dennis, could I say something?
Sure.
I'm older than you, and back in the old days with the Vietnam War, the only thing that got that war any real attention to get us out of there was the soldiers coming home and protesting.
Right.
We tried it before that, and they beat the crap out of everybody in Lincoln Park.
Right.
So the point is that that's the only thing that's really going to do it. I don't see anything else. And the bottom line is you're dealing with people who really don't care about us. Kissinger made it clear when he said that soldiers are stupid, dumb animals to be used in foreign policy and to be washed away. He didn't say the satanic part, but I'll add that, a satanic institution. Anybody that tells you to kill is right, and they're saying you're doing it in the name of God has to have a screw loose.
Right.
Well, Dennis, now you're going to New York, and you during the Mardi Gras season down there, you were in New Orleans, correct?
Right, I went down there, I marched in the Martin Luther King Jr. Parade in the 8th Ward down in New Orleans, and then I marched on the Jazz Funeral for Democracy.
No, it's for Black History Month. It's better down there now. I know I'm asking a white dude this question, but, I think it's a very important one, because from your aspect of going down there, and this is past the millennium, would you say that we have advanced, or... Where are we?
Well, yeah, you're asking a white dude. I don't think that the South has cleaned its act up, and I think that the South is still the front line of the fight on civil rights.
Try Texas.
Yeah, hey man, I know they were dragging people around there. It's just incredible.
Now you're talking about the president's state now.
Very
careful.
don't forget the governor of Florida. Right. And it's just despicable. I went down there, and I had lived in Columbus, Georgia, when I was stationed at Fort Benning. And, I was aware of the racism and the bigotry. And I was hoping that even a decade later that it had gotten a little bit better.
Yeah.
And it just hasn't,
It's gotten worse.
It really has. It's really a despicable.
Worse.
I'm from the old days. It was bad. This is horrible.
Right. It's not.
And we're doing it ourselves. I mean, we've become the terrorists.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about the military, and we want to talk old school military, the black military was a very interesting venture. Not many people know that Sears Roebuck, Roebuck of Sears Roebuck, in fact, was one that paid for and created the Tuskegee area, whereby they began their first military movement of having blacks trained in the military. I interviewed a gentleman that went to school with my father, Dan Burley, who was a well-known writer, reporter, and editor, and took the first USO tour over to Burma during World War II. Alonzo Parham was the first black to go into the he's the second black that went into the West Point Academy. And he told me, and it was just heart-rendering because I feel people's pain, how he was put into like a place the size of a closet to learn his schooling because he was not allowed to be taught with the rest of the cadets who were white. And through the time and course that he was there, he decided to sit there and fight through the bigotry and sit in the closet and learn. And he could not speak to anyone other than the instructor. And he could not socialize with anyone inside the school. And it almost broke him, in fact, mentally. His morale went really down. But he was an incredible man. He died a few years back. But the military, traditionally, from when it started up until, I would say, close to the end of World War II, was segregated. Black troops were separated. They were only allowed to do certain things, certain missions, until they had the Tuskegee Airmen. And I want to ask you, on the basis of this history, what is it like in the Middle East with black military men and their counterpart? Is there still areas and residue of racism in the military?
I believe so, and I think that these attitudes will always be a reflection of your leadership, too. And the leadership in the military is very, very racist. It's very, very gender preferential. That's what we see from, you know, the tailhook scandals and the rapes that go on in the schools across all types of military installations. You know, young women being raped repeatedly. And that's not to say that young men aren't being raped by other men in the military, too. That's happened quite often. So you see this happening, this dehumanization is part of the program. You have to have it inherent in the system, otherwise you can't really talk people into going off onto a battlefield and killing other humans unless you've just become, you know, a dehumanized machine. So what they try to do is they try to get, you know, people to pit at each other, and they've always been successful getting one poor person to pit themselves against another poor person for something that person had, no matter what color they were. So when you get into the military, and you know, when I went in as a private, my pay was $480 a month, and we would be easy to be resentful towards a guy that might be, you know, making $700. You know, you could find reasons to do it. They stimulate you to find a little bit of resentment, and of course everything's going to, you know, perpetuate because it's all vertical. You're actually, you know, just if you come in to an institution somewhat bigoted because that's your background, those are the people you're going to associate with. You know, they make rank, you make rank with them. And that's the same thing that happens in your jail systems, in the institutionalization there. People go in and they just form allegiances, and that's what institutions do. You know, they really intend on, you know, keeping you in there, fighting amongst yourselves over the scraps.
And that same principle, that same fiber, that same thought process is what goes on in America and various other countries. Everyone is fighting against everyone else and not realizing there's a bigger picture at hand. It's about economics, it's about race, it's about creed, and it's about nationality. But none of that really matters because that stuff was set up as a basis for everyone to argue amongst each other so they can't see the bigger picture before them. And before this program ends, Dennis, I want you to tell the audience your website address and how they can reach you if they want some information or material on what you're doing.
Okay, great. My website is my name, www.denniskind.com. It's
dennis.kyne.com, and you can email me from there, or you can email me at d_kyne@hotmail.com, and feel free to fire off any questions you got, and you can get my book, Support the Truth, and an album I put out with four songs called Support the Truth as well. They're both available from my website or over at Amazon.com if anybody's shopping over there.
Are you a musician, Dennis?
Yes.
What do you play?
I play the guitar. And,
you're kidding.
Yeah, I play the guitar and I sing. The album is actually, we made number 16 on the Earshot charts in Canada.
Get out.
Yeah, I got a nice little set that I play.
What type of music?
Well, all the reviews say, the University of Idaho just kicked me in the teeth when they reviewed the album, but a couple of the others say I sound like Neil Young, just a little less whiny.
Hey, that's pretty good, because I play keyboards and play bass, and I write material, too. Deanne's known me for a while now, and I'm looking for musicians to start something to go out there and sing the truth to the people instead of just having the same crap that's been feeding the Hollywood and the music industry, which is completely controlled. If I will email you.
Yeah, do it.
And
email.
I'll be more than happy, because if you guys want to go out there and sing to the people without causing any uproars, because, of course, Patriot Act 1 has already been passed.
Right.
That's another thing I wanted to say before I forgot. When you have a Congress and they are told to sign something without reading it, and they do it out of the fear that if they don't do it, something happens. The manipulation of our fear, again, gives us this nonsense that they're able to get away with.
Well, I was told by some, too, that they said, there was one that it tickled me. The comment was, do you expect us to read all of that?
Yeah.
You know, if you have that job, I would imagine that you should be up on whatever it is you're signing. But, you know, this is what the issue is, and that's why people need to be on these people. You know, Patriot Act 2 is about to be signed, and who knows what there's going to be the offshoot of that. And there was a bill that they just signed into law now that they can get all of your DNA, hospital records, everything, blah, 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 from your Social Security, everything, onto your driver's license.
What about Gates? Bill Gates, who's now working for the government to make a chip so it'll all fit us.
Yeah, well, they're already chipping people's pets, so, you know.
The next step is, go ahead.
The whole issue is that, you know, and then that's a question, too. Is the military being chipped? We don't even know what you're experiencing over there with them giving you shots. And I heard, is it not true that you also are subjugated to experimental drugs?
Mm.
Is it true?
I mean, you wouldn't know. Of course they can pull that on you. You're right in their clutches.
Dennis, is that true, though?
Oh, I think the whole thing is an experiment, and I'm pretty sure that there's all kinds of experiments going on. I think that we're the number one study group in the world. We're a volunteer study group.
Well, I want the listeners to know, too, that this show is being taped, as the other ones that have the tape interview of Malachi Vanunu. I have the ones from Alfred Weber and others. They're available. If you want to write to me, my email address is Danne, Deanne Broly at yahoo.com is the easiest one. DeanneBroly@yahoo.com. Thank you very much, Dennis, for coming on.
Thanks,
I appreciate you, and keep up the good work, and stay safe.
All right, and I'll get back to you. Yes.